Produced by PI Media.
Hi, and welcome to Checkpoint Radio's Cyber Academy. I'm Ran Levy. What's that, I hear you asking? A Cyber Academy? So, yeah, we're adding a new format to our podcast, not replacing the usual stories we bring you in the podcast, but adding some new content that we think might appeal to you, and in particular to those of you who are new to the world of cybersecurity or wish to expand their horizons in this domain. So, in each episode of the Cyber Academy, we'll bring you a single topic, usually a basic term, an idea, or a technology related to cybersecurity, and cover the basics of what you need to know about that topic in order to better understand cybersecurity and its complexities. And now, it's time for you to meet our guide in this journey. Yaniv Balmas, head of cyber research at Checkpoint, and a man who fought in the trenches of cybersecurity for more than 15 years. I'm almost tempted to call you Sergeant Balmas for the rest of the episode. Hi, Yaniv.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for joining us. So, enough with the introductions. Let's dive straight into our first topic, which is vulnerabilities. It's a word you almost certainly have heard many, many times, but I have a feeling that for someone who is not a developer, a software vulnerability might be a bit vague. So, Yaniv, most of our listeners are probably familiar with a software bug. It's a mistake in the code. But what is a vulnerability, and what makes it different than a normal, quote-unquote, normal bug?
Basically, a vulnerability is not a lot different than a bug. Actually, it's kind of a type of a bug, right? So normal bugs might lead to some, you know, the application is not doing something that it's expected to do, but the end result might be just, for example, inconvenience to the user, or the application is not working, something functional. A vulnerability, basically, is a bug that will lead to some security issues with the application, and that's all it is.
So it's a bug, but it's exploitable in the narrow prism of cybersecurity, in a sense.
Well, exploitable is kind of
sometimes.
It might be exploitable. Yeah.
Okay, so let's familiarize our listeners with the most common types of vulnerabilities and how they might be exploited by attackers. So one of the most famous ones, let's start with SQL injection.
SQL injection. So basically, these bugs, this type of bugs, SQL injections, they exist in web servers. So if you have a web server, most usually, the data that's coming in and out of this web server needs to be stored somewhere. And that somewhere will most usually be a database, right? And now SQL is basically the standard language that's used for the web server to talk to the database, right? It's just a textual format. It's some kind of query saying, please bring me all the users that were registered starting from January 2020. Just an example, right? And the database in response will just send you the list of the users, which the web server can then do whatever he wants with, usually, you know, to present it to the user browsing to the website. Now, the thing is that this query language might also be an issue because it usually contains a lot of parameters. Some of them are what we called user controlled. So the user controls parts of these queries. And if a malicious user knows exactly what to put in this query, It might turn this from a legitimate query to a very bad query. So, for example, the web server is sure that the user is going to ask for all users that were registered since January 2020, but since the user inserts something that the web server didn't expect, it might get back a totally different response, and it might even lead to a complete exposure of the entire database. So the database will start returning data that it wasn't expected to return in the first place.
But there's one thing I don't understand yet. You're saying that the database is, in essence, in the back end of the website I'm interfacing with, I'm using as a user. Mm-hmm. How can I, the user who browses to a website, interface with a database which is essentially behind the scenes. You know, I'm usually seeing on my screen HTML, JavaScript, CSS. How do I even get the chance of interacting with a database behind the scenes?
All right, so let's follow the example we just gave, right? So I'm browsing to a website, and this website is asking me, from when do you want to get the list of the users, right? That's the mm-hmm. question that I'm being asked.
In a kind of a web form.
Yeah, you just need to enter a date. That's it, yeah. Right?
Date field. Yeah,
give me a date.
Simple.
And I'll give you back all the users that were registered starting this date, right? Now, what's expected from me as a user is to enter a date, right? But I don't have to enter a date. I can enter practically whatever I want. And if I know what to enter, I can manipulate the query that the web server will compose for me. So instead of bring me all the users, I can say, okay, bring me all the users and the query, start a new query, and bring me all the passwords that were ever inserted into the database. Now, from the web server's perspective, that's a valid query. It will go to the database, query this, and return the data to me. So that's the essence of an SQL injection.
And the mistake here, the bug, quote unquote, is that the developer did not think that he or she needs to sanitize the information that the user enters into the field.
Right.
So it didn't limit you to just enter a specific date. So you can use anything, right? That's the vulnerability.
In security concepts, user input is always evil. You cannot trust user input. You always have to validate it to make sure it's the right size, it's the right query. Now, and if you as a developer forget about it, or you know, just say, I trust that, that's okay, that's usually
that's
a starting point for a lot of problems.
Okay, next type of vulnerability or a kind of vulnerability is cross-site scripting, which sometimes is abbreviated to XSS. So what is cross-site scripting?
Well, cross-site scripting, if before when we talked about SQL injection, we talked about a vulnerability that exists in the web server itself, now we go to a different type of applications, and this type of applications is actually the browser, the internet browser, whether it's Chrome or Internet Explorer or whatever. This browser, obviously, it runs on your computer, on the user's computer, right? And that could be exploited as well in many ways. XSS is actually one of the most common bugs out there. And it has several flavors to it. But let's, you know, discuss just one maybe simple flavor of it. I think the most understandable example here will be kind of a forum. So you enter a forum, just a forum where people just write whatever they want and
post messages,
reply to others, and so on. And now you can basically insert whatever comment you want because that's the basics of a forum, right? But the web browser, the thing that you're using, he can read from the website other text, just text, or special code that's called usually JavaScript, right? Now, this JavaScript is not interpreted as text by the browser. It gives the browser commands like do that, do this, do here, do there. And when you're reading a message from a forum, you don't expect to see JavaScript. I mean, you just expect to see someone mm-hmm. saying something. But basically, nothing is stopping the user who is posting the message from just writing JavaScript in there. And if it can do it, then the browser will read back the message, say, okay, this is JavaScript. Let's do whatever this JavaScript tells me to do, right? And that, again, is an unexpected behavior by the browser, but it's legit. I mean, from the browser's mm-hmm. perspective, it's completely legit. He will run these commands, and that gives you, as an attacker, an opportunity to basically run scripts on users' browser.
So where is the quote-unquote bug here? I mean, it's a forum. Everybody can write whatever they like. What should the developer do in order to prevent this kind of an attack?
So again, since we already said that before, the forum is not expected to get JavaScript and messages. It's mm-hmm. only expected to get text. And if the web developer did not sanitize this or make sure that the user only entered text and not JavaScript, then this vulnerability exists.
So that's the second type of vulnerability. The third one is one of my personal favorites, a buffer overflow. It's a kind of vulnerability that have existed for tens of years, from the earliest, I think, computers even. What is a buffer overflow?
Well, yeah, you're definitely right. It's one of the, you know, traditional bugs that we we always like to talk about. And you know, if until now we talked about web servers or browsers, but there are other types of applications, many of them. And basically, the way that any application on your computer stores data usually involves some kind of buffers. They could be stored in many places, but basically it's buffers. So if
I'm a memory buffer, an area in the memory.
Yeah. So basically, if you're running any type of application and it's asking you to enter some input, let's say, give me your username and password in order to log in, right? Then when you provide the username, right? So the application needs to take this data. Okay, that's the username, and needs to store it somewhere in the memory, right? That place where it's stored is called a buffer. And computers are basically stupid. I mean, they don't know what to do unless you tell them so. And in terms of memory, usually you need to tell him, okay, so please allocate for me 100 characters long buffer, right? And inside this 100 characters long buffer, I'm going to store the username. And then I can use it later for whatever I want. That's mm-hmm. that's kind of how a computer thinks, right? The problem here, again, is with evil user input. So, yeah, I allocated a 100 characters long buffer, right? So I'm expecting to use the user to insert a username that is no longer than 100 characters, right? Now, technically, it makes sense because who has a name that's, you know, longer than 100 characters? But if someone will enter 101 characters or more, of course, basically what the computer will do is will take this big name, 101 characters, and put it inside a box, inside a buffer that's only 100 characters long, making one character overflow. I mean, writing the extra character into a place that it was not expected to write it to. Now, what happens in this place? That's a good question. Sometimes it's just random data. Sometimes it can actually overwrite other application or other functionalities data, allowing the attacker to manipulate the application in some way.
Gives the attacker the opportunity to manipulate other areas in memory which he is not supposed to touch, he's not supposed to have access to.
Yeah, take the basic example. It's not absolutely true in technical terms, but it's good for understanding. One application is using this section of memory. Another application is using another section of memory that is just mm-hmm. comes after this. Usually, this application can't see what's going on in this application's memory, and that's okay, that's by design. And this buffer overflows basically lets you write memory to the memory allocated by a completely different application. So think about it, you know, I can give you an application that basically will now overwrite your bank account that's stored somewhere else, something like that. That's the essence of buffer overflows.
So here the developer actually made a mistake by, again, not thinking about the user input and kind of sanitizing it in a way that will limit it to that area, right? That's the vulnerability.
Right. And it's these mistakes are very common because they are basically human errors. You know, I know that I allocated a 100 byte long buffer. I just didn't think that anyone will ever think to himself entering this 101 bytes, but again, this is the essence of almost any vulnerability.
Humans are evil.
Humans are evil, but they might be evil.
We gave you three basic types of very common vulnerabilities. But you know, Yaniv, let's assume that my code is perfect. Zero bugs, no vulnerabilities. I know exactly what I'm doing. Am I safe? Can I sleep soundly at night?
Well, The thing is that, you know, computers are complex creatures. Stupid, as I said, but still complex, right? And there are many, many, many different layers of things, or your applications, basically. Whatever, all the bugs that we just discussed are running in the top layer, like the applications that the user interacts with. But in order to actually function correctly, they must have some dialogue, some functionality with the operating system, because they are running on either Windows or Linux or Mac or whatever, and this operating system provides them with some functionalities. They must talk to them. So sometimes, although your application might be absolutely 100% bug-free and vulnerability-free, there might still be some bug or vulnerability in the lower layers, that is, in the operating system layer, and that bug doesn't have anything to do with you. It's a bug that was created by the same people that wrote the operating system. You have no control over that. You actually have no way to know that this vulnerability is there. So although your code is clean, you are still not completely safe.
There's no way to completely escape the problems of cybersecurity. The last type of vulnerability we will discuss here is what's called a hardware vulnerability. Now, we only discussed so far software vulnerabilities. What is a hardware vulnerability?
Yeah, so we just started talking about layers. So there's the application layer, there's the operating system layer, and of course, underneath everything, there is the physical layer, the things that make up your computer physically, cards, CPUs, memories, buffers, stuff like that. And obviously, they are not vulnerability-free, and usually they are caused by some physical, by some or some mechanical issue, or by, you know, something similar. Usually they are very complex bugs. I'll give you one, I think, very nice example. There's a vulnerability that's called Rowhammer. The thing with that is that it basically attacks or affects memory. And not memory as we spoke about before, applications memory, but actual physical memory. You see, you can think of when you put a memory card, memory chip inside your computer, did you ever wonder what this chip actually does or how it's constructed? So it might be a complex construction, but the very abstraction of it would be that you have some kind of hive of cells, right? Just cells that receive electrical input, right? If the electricity is on, the value is one. And if the electricity is off, the value is zero. And these are a lot of cells. And, you know, memory, as years progress, memory gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. But the card is only of a certain size. I mean, there's a limit to the physical size that it can be. So memory manufacturers always try to dense it, compress it, make it, you know, have more memory in the same physical space. What it actually does, it brings these hive cells closer and closer and closer and closer together. And sometimes there's this weird phenomenon where one of these cells might actually impact the cells right next to it, because when it has electrical charge in it, now this electrical charge is kind of leaking to some of the other cells, and it might actually turn them from zero to one, from no electricity to electricity, while this wasn't expected by anyone. And that could lead to vulnerabilities as well. It's kind of complex to exploit them, but it is possible. And again, this problem raises from the physical layer. You have nothing to do in your control.
There's nothing the software can do about it.
Absolutely nothing. It's completely underneath it. The software is completely blind to this kind of vulnerabilities, but still they exist.
And from what we've heard in the last few years, we had several type of vulnerabilities discovered in Intel's chips, etc. They are so difficult to fix because they are in the hardware level. So there's no easy software fix that you can kind of push to everyone and kind of get rid of the problem.
Absolutely.
So it's a tough problem to solve if you have that kind of a problem. Thank you very much, Yaniv. It's been very, very interesting. I hope we kind of illuminated your knowledge in that respect. And that's it to this episode of the Checkpoint Cyber Academy. We hope you enjoy the conversation. If you have other suggestions for future topics, we'll be more than happy to hear from you. My email address is ran@ranlevy.com. That's ranlevi.com. And you can also find me on Twitter at ranlevy. Again, ranlevi. Yaniv Balmas, head of cyber research at Checkpoint, thank you very, very much. It was a pleasure. For more episodes of our podcast, visit research.checkpoint.com and look for the Checkpoint Radio banner at the top right corner, or search for Checkpoint Research in your favorite podcast application. Checkpoint Radio is produced by PI Media. Learn more at podil.net. Bye-bye.
Produced by PI Media.